Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glass.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Sexual predators and comprehensive sex education both break down inhibitions. That's what they start with. They also gain trust with the child and then slowly start to get them towards sexual activity.
Anything goes. You are teaching children adult child sex. You're teaching transgender issues. Children are moldable and influenced by that.
They said, okay, now we need you and your team to be able to explain what homosexuality is to a four-year-old student.
To introduce this kind of material at that age, frankly, it's child abuse.
You're going to teach our children that it's okay for any two children of any age, of any sex, to have sexual intercourse with each other as long as two components are present, one's using a condom and they both give consent. Did I hear that correctly?
It's not a neutral venue. There's no such thing. Okay, the schools are doing your job. They are discipling your children, but they're not discipling them in the faith of Jesus Christ.
It's only the exceptional child that even survives that system. Most do not survive. Most have not survived.
They believe that children are sexual from birth and that they deserve and have the right to be sexually active and to seek sexual pleasure. And if anyone is stopping them from that, then you are judging and oppressing them.
Even kindergarten now, they're wanting to teach them more and more perverse information and acts and put that into the children's minds. And once that poison is in the child's mind, it doesn't leave. They'll always remember what they learned. And it's by design, it's orchestrated.
In my humble opinion, it will be worse before it gets better.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of Him who has called you out of darkness into His marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. Hour number three. And if you missed any parts of our first couple of hours, I encourage you to pick them up. You can get the recordings at ChosenGenerationRadio.com, ChosenGenerationRadio.com, either through the show archives link that you'll find there or at the listen link as well. And you can get plugged in whatever your favorite podcast flavor is. The shows automatically go in through RSS feed and are set up as podcasts right after we finish each hour's broadcast. So you can check them out that way. iTunes, iHeart, TuneIn, Spotify, Deezer, Jizavon. There's a whole bunch of them, about 12 or 14 of them. At any rate, pick your flavor and stay up to date. Rick Manning joined us to open things up. We talked about the $6 billion Iranian deal. We had a live interview with several wounded soldiers at the superhuman complex in Ukraine. Then we followed that up with a conversation that we had with Patrick Mara, GOP's D.C. Chairman, talking about what's happening there and the lawlessness in that community. And then we just finished a brief conversation with Mike Huff talking about SB. Our HB 571, which is HB 3751. Get that number right. But at any rate, Pritzker's agreement to make illegals law enforcement. We talked about that. So at any rate, there you go. Well, I'm very excited to have my next guest with me. First time that he's joining me, he's been a regular contributor to TECN-TV and with Ken McClinton on the Exceptional Conservative Show. And I welcome Biff Zeppi, CEO of SHR Media. Biff, welcome. Good to have you.
Well, good morning, sir. And how are you doing?
Well, for a guy that got in a fight with a truck and won, I'm doing quite well.
Okay.
I have to tell you that story sometime. Anyway, there's a lot of areas based on your extensive background, a lot of areas that we could jump into. But I know one of the things we wanted to talk about this morning was the appointed D.C. Police Chief Pamela Smith, and apparently she just recently had a meeting and said, "Hey, we need to get more officers out on the street." Unfortunately, according to Patrick Mara, who resides there in D.C., that's going to be a little tricky since they shut the academy down during COVID, and so they don't really have any graduates coming up.
Well, what if we held a war and no military people came? How amazing would that be? Is anyone actually shocked that D.C. finds itself in the horns of this particular dilemma? I myself am not. They are in the same boat, so to speak, as is what I term any given leftist urban rat cage these days. If it leans left, then it's going to be a failing area. D.C. is no different.
Well, and what good is it going to be to put more police on the street when you're not going to let them enforce any laws to begin with anyway? I mean, it really doesn't make any sense.
Well, police law enforcement is in a huge dilemma these days. And I don't see that we've witnessed the bottom of this yet. I think we still have further to fall. And I think law enforcement, there is a little bit of the worm turning, so to speak. But I don't think in many areas, D.C. would obviously be one of them. I don't see law enforcement coming back as we knew it. That is to say, efficient and actually doing its job enforcing laws in 5 years, 10 years, if for no other reason that the people on the left will do their very level best to ensure that it simply can't happen. Now, D.C. is not the only law enforcement entity that's having a massive difficulty in recruiting. CHP just recently graduated 70 individuals from their academy. In the 90s, in the early 2000s, it was customary for the CHP Academy, renowned in excellent training up and down the state of California, to graduate anywhere from 200, 300 people, sometimes 400 or 500 a year. Well, number one, you have a massive problem, A, in recruiting. You're simply not going to get people on the left who say that they want to change law enforcement. They're NA or NI, not interested, so that's not going to occur. And then you have to ask yourself literally, because I was in law enforcement for 41 years. I retired in 2016 at the age of 66. That's how either A, stupid I was, or B, that's how much I loved my job. That's over twice what most cops customarily put in.
When did you retire very quickly? When did you retire?
2016.
Okay.
And that was just before things got really silly, stupid, and fattening all at once.
But they had gotten pretty bad going back about 5 or 6 years in particular. About 2010 is when the impact of Obama's Department of Justice policies really started to kick in. Am I accurate in that assessment?
To a percentile, yes, you are.
Okay.
But there were a lot of extraneous things that were all... You've heard, I'm sure, of the book by Sebastian Junger, The Perfect Storm, and you may have even seen the movie.
Yeah.
That was trudging slowly towards where it is now, but no one could possibly have anticipated how ridiculously vapid the administrators for law enforcement have become. It was the perfect storm in terms of hiring, in terms of trying to keep officers, and just their being able to do the job. You could see a little bit of it when I was getting towards the end, closer to retirement. We were still attempting to fight the good fight. Now, you would think that Sacramento is a massively leftist community because it's the capital of the state of California. And to a great degree, it is. It's always been a state workers' town.
Right.
But the Sacramento Police Department always leaned much harder left than the Sacramento Sheriff's Department, which is where I worked.
Okay.
And there, Pastor, lies a massive, massive difference that people must understand. There is a huge difference between a city police chief and a sheriff. The police chief is appointed and the sheriff is elected. And because the sheriff is elected, naturally, there's a massive push to attempt to get rid of sheriffs. But you have to ask yourself, why would that be? Now, I'm doing this in kind of a circuitous loop. I'm getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Police department chiefs are appointed. They're generally appointed by whoever wherever the weight is in the given jurisdiction. Cities generally will have a strong city council, or maybe a strong city manager, or maybe a strong mayor. Whoever or wherever that strength lies, that will be the testing and the appointing individual or board or agency for that given city. In D.C., now let's come back to D.C., you asked about the problem with Pamela Smith. So I can go through the history of Pamela Smith if anyone is particularly interested, but I think what you're looking at or trying to discern is, now that there is a different individual in D.C., will anything change? And I'll just hit you with the bottom line, sir, up front, which is no, of course not. There is no way it's going to change, because who pulls the strings? Who, sir, do you think pulls the strings in D.C. in terms of the chief of police?
The mayor.
Absolutely. What do we know about the mayor?
Hard-leaning left.
Massive, massive leftist. So you could install my dog Spot in that position. And the same thing that's been occurring under Bowser, and I'm, forgive me, when I hear that name, I keep thinking of the dog in a cartoon. When you talk to Bowser, or when you relate to Bowser, she's not going to change. So because she's not going to change, you're not going to see any change in D.C. Who must submit that change? Well, it will be the police chief. But the police chief will soon, if she doesn't already realize that she's the puppet on whose strings Bowser is making her dance. So if there's any bit of not just regime change, but any significant change that that chief wants to make, do you think, sir, that she has the ability to automatically put pen to paper as a directive and change that department? And the answer is no way. She does not run the department. Bowser runs that department and every other agency that falls under the DC mayor. It's no more complicated than that.
Let's shift to go back to the general police issue and what law enforcement is facing, which has been this whole, you know, defund police. And I was thinking about when the shift took place. So the Trayvon Martin incident took place in 2012. I was thinking that it was the middle of Obama's term. I know from talking with J. Christian Adams that that Obama hired 1,500 civil rights activist attorneys to go to work in the Department of Justice looking for racist issues to bring up. And his first act, of course, was that whole thing going after the security guard and the professor at the university that was, you know, stopped and asked for identification because he was trying to get into the window of his residence. But there's no way for that guard to know who he is or why he's trying to get into that window. And, of course, it was immediately assumed that was a racial situation as well. But you've got Trayvon Martin and you've got Mike Brown and that whole thing. And that puts a target on the backs of police officers, does it not, Viv?
It does, but I would submit that has started way before. There's a section that people would only know about in the USC, the United States Code, and it's called 42 USC 1983, which is otherwise known as a 1983 action. And people would be familiar with a 1983 action if you go back to the Rodney King incident and the Rodney King riots of 1991 after the vehicle stop, Stacey Kuhn, et cetera, LAPD.
Right.
The first trial was found not guilty. Then they decided that they were going to go after the law enforcement officers through a federal venue. Well, 42 USC 1983 pays attorneys to sue for a violation or deprivation of civil rights. That has occurred for quite some time. That became a thing in the 1970s and then the 1980s. And then you also have to look at, you're kind of looking at an overarching, a big umbrella in terms of law enforcement, and perhaps that's where you want to go. But California, always spell it with a K, was in the process of shooting itself in the head far before 2010. There were two massive propositions that the people of the state of California decided that they wanted to vote for. Propositions are things that if you get enough signatures, you can put a proposition on the ballot for November. And that's what occurs in the state of California. It's been going on for quite some time. And then if people vote for the proposition, it becomes law. First, you have to qualify to get it on the ballot, et cetera.
Yep.
Proposition 147 was first voted on, then Proposition 157. Propositions 147 and 157 brought felonies in the state of California. Basically, it decriminalized dope, for one thing.
Right.
And the other thing that it did is it it was sold as a lie but the people were stupid enough to buy it and to listen to the people that were selling it to them, who in California are nothing but salesmen. But it didn't decriminalize, but it took things that were once felonies and made them misdemeanors or much lesser crimes, mm-hmm. to include all up and down the state, theft, grand theft, the delineated dollar amount for grand theft, which used to be $400 in the state of California. Anything above that was a felony. And then moved down in terms of a serious crime, and moved down crimes such as, please be sitting down for this, folks, rape,
right.
statutory rape,
yeah.
some cases of manslaughter, assault with big injuries. The litany on that list is endless. Well, the people themselves in the state of California, they are responsible for voting that in. Well, this has been cresting, building for quite some time in terms of tsunami, and I say it's a perfect storm because all of these things that you just mentioned, Pastor, occurred not simultaneously, but they built up very, very rapidly. And then when people, managers, administrators, chiefs of police, mayors, governors, et cetera, decided that they were going to pull their law enforcement from these riots, and they were nothing more than riots in 2020 following George Floyd. Say what you will about George Floyd, but for the most part, certainly in leftist urban rat cages, the police departments were simply pulled back and told simply not to interfere. Well, that's been occurring for quite some time in California. Berkeley PD, all the officers there were told from the chief, who got a phone call from the mayor, et cetera, to pull back in the various riots that have historically occurred there, but mostly in the, 2010s, 2008, 2009, right around in there. And that reminds me, funding is a very important aspect of all of these things. $15 million was pulled from the D.C. police, and the D.C. police and people that are in support of the D.C. police, that is to say the leftist mayor, et cetera, are told that $15 million is a bogus number. No, it's not. Go look it up. But also the things that occurred is, in California specifically, if you recall, most will understand what large national event occurred in 2008. And the answer is the housing crash.
Sure.
Well, that affected everyone, as you would expect, and it affected law enforcement. Now, my department at one point had about 3,000 deputies. And it was down already at that time in 2008. And I shall never forget, on the first day of a new assignment for me, my job was to collect the firearms, the belts, the equipment, the radios of 300 deputies that were laid off in 2008, 2009, that still we've not gotten back in the department. So that occurred all across the nation as well. But that was just a hint of things to come. We went through the defund movement. We went through George Floyd. We went through the riots that occurred in D.C. in 2017 that no one talks about, where more officers were injured, more property was damaged than anything that occurred on J6. This all is a perfect storm, and it's affecting law enforcement, but it's affecting those people in the services to people. It's not just affecting law enforcement. It's affecting our military, our volunteers in the military, our volunteers in law enforcement. People may or may not know that there are people called reserves who sign up to do that job for free within limitations. You can't find people for the military anymore, and you can't find people for law enforcement anymore.
Right.
Recruiting is down. Hiring is down. Academies are down. And it's because people are simply not interested in doing the job anymore. And to a great degree, if someone were to ask me today, if you had a son, would you want that son to go into law enforcement? In a left or a blue state, and particularly in a blue city or town, oh no, not even in the slightest
right.
would I want anybody to go into any police department or sheriff's department that is even aligned with those areas.
Well, and understandably so, because the reality is that their safety, their personal safety. I mean, you know, that's always obviously a concern, or has been a concern, right? You know, with law enforcement, you walk out the door, you go on shift, and there's always that lingering potential. But when you are literally battling with both your hands tied behind your back and virtually no defense, your ability to, I mean, the concern has to be dramatically heightened.
I was in law enforcement for a long time, and all during my career, no matter which department I worked for, I was involved in some form of training. And that training ran the gamut from training individuals as a training officer in patrol, to EVOC, which is our Emergency Vehicle Operations course, where I taught people driving skills, taught them pursuit, Code 3 driving, and precision skills, and also taught two fire department agencies and paramedics, and also taught motors, authority motors, which is motorcycles. So I had the pleasure of teaching in two of the most important aspects of training, which was guns and cars, cars and guns. I was an EVOC, and then I was also our designated range master. So in terms of training, well, you have to ask yourself this too. What is the very first thing that's cut in a budgetary crisis in law enforcement?
Training. Always.
Training.
Yep.
Always.
Yep. Training. Always. Every time. Every time. Well, and you know, again, when you know that when you're not trained well, that's obviously a huge problem. But then when you also know that the people that you're going out there who are supposed to be protecting you as you are enforcing the law, and they're not, and they're more interested in protecting the criminal than they are in protecting you, and you have to be concerned about that, and that, you know, somebody is going to make an accusation and you are, as an officer, now presumed guilty rather than presumed innocent. It's a dangerous situation for all of us, Biff. It really is. I hate to do this, but I got to let you go. Biff Zeppi, CEO.
Thank you kindly for having me here.
Absolutely. SHR Media. And is it shrmedia.com?
Yes, sir, it is. Thank you kindly.
Absolutely. shrmedia.com. Biff, thanks for the conversation. I greatly appreciate it.
Pastor Greg, thank you kindly, sir. God bless, and you have a great day, sir.
Thank you very much. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be back on the other side. Chelsea Yeoman joins us on the other side. We're going to talk about the push for chemical abortions that they continue to push for. And we'll be back to talk about that coming up right after this brief break. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Hi, this is Pastor Greg, and you're listening to Chosen Generation Radio. Get more at ChosenGenerationRadio.com. That's Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses.
Hi, I'm Tim Sheff, a certified natural health practitioner of over 40 years. I want to introduce you to a product that changed my life. The product's called Vibe, available at cgrwellness.com. I thought I was on a good nutritional program before I discovered Vibe. I was taking the traditional vitamin and mineral tablets, wasn't really feeling any different. So I tried Vibe. Vibe is an all-in-one vitamin and mineral supplement. It's a liquid multivitamin. It's cold-pressed, whole-food sourced, non-radiated, gluten-free, and has no pasteurization. Vibe is like fresh juicing without all the work. It supports four areas of the body: cardiovascular health, immune health, anti-aging, and healthy cell replication. Vibe is available in a 32-ounce bottle for home use or a very handy 1-ounce travel packet for life on the go. The first time I tried Vibe, I had more energy in about 20 minutes. I started thinking clear. Even believe I slept better. Get yours today at cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio at checkout and receive $20 off your first order of $50 or more. That's cgrwellness.com. Coupon code ChosenGenRadio. Get yours today.
These statements have not been evaluated by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Any of the products do not treat, reduce, cure, or prevent disease.
My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for in World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, CEO of MyPillow. Retailers, shopping channels, and now even banks have tried to cancel myself and MyPillow. Well, during these times, your support has meant everything to us. So my employees and I want to personally thank each and every one of you by passing the savings directly on to you. We're selling the best products ever for the best prices ever. For example, we have my standard size MyPillow, regularly $69.98, now only $19.98 with your promo code. Or you can get custom fit with my premium queen-size MyPillows, regularly $79.98, now just $29.98. Or my king-size regular $89.98, now just $34.98. So go to MyPillow.com now and use the promo code on your screen or call the 1-800 number below to receive this exclusive offer. If you do it right now, I'm going to include a free gift with your purchase. Thank you and God bless.
So up next, we have ClanSlate. When you have different things like cancer and different diseases that are autoimmune related, it can really help with inflammation because you're helping clean the body. And ClanSlate is a formula that's made from a natural orthosilic acid that basically is put into a formulation that's naturally occurring that uses different processes from polarization to heating to cooling to different types of catalysts, which will go in the body and really help communicate to get rid of those things that don't need to be there. People don't understand why there's so many autoimmune disorders, but our environment's toxic. The land, air, and water have changed. We've been exposed to nuclear war, and the issue is if there's a nuclear bomb or there's pollution or there's war in one country, it actually affects everything up to the stratosphere. So we're all connected, and we've really got to clean things out.
You can pick up your clean slate today at cgrforlife.com. That's cgrforlife.com. Pick up your clean slate today.
You can support Chosen Generation and make a tax-deductible donation by visiting www.chosengenerationradio.com. And now, back to Chosen Generation with Pastor Greg.
And welcome back to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. I'm your host, Pastor Greg. Thanks so much for being with me. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the program my next guest. She is with the National Right for Life Texas chapter. And it's always a pleasure to have Chelsea Yeoman join us on the program. Chelsea, welcome. Good to have you with me.
Pastor Greg.
Thanks for being here this morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can.
Okay, great. So welcome. Good to have you.
Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. So let's talk about what's going on. What are we dealing with now? I mean, we've been fighting this. This is the large scale push for chemical abortions, correct?
Yes, what we're seeing is a nationwide push, no matter what state you're in, blue, yellow, green, red, purple, states are harboring, states like Washington and New York City, sometimes thousands of chemical abortion pills. They're illegally mailing them into states that are protecting life, and so we're no longer in a world where women even need to go to an abortion clinic to obtain an abortion. They never leave their house. They order the pill online. It is shipped to her door by sometimes international pharmacies or these third-party groups and activists. And we're still seeing a very dangerous push for that. It puts women in harm's way and obviously kills their unborn children.
What are the health risks that we're finding are associated with this for the mom?
Well, it's really a dire situation out there for these mothers. The FDA approved the abortion pill regimen illegally, which a lower court has already ruled, and the Fifth Circuit is considering that approval process this day. And what we're finding is women who are ectopic and don't receive a sonogram are at risk for rupture of, and death even. We're talking things like needing hysterectomies, hemorrhage is a high risk, but there's all kinds of complications that arise. But women aren't told about those complications. Women are told that the pill is as easy as taking a Tylenol. We know Tylenol doesn't cause infertility, hemorrhage, or result in the death of your child. So this is a violent regimen. It's a dangerous regimen. And at Human Coalition, we're serving pregnant women in need day in and day out. We're really seeing the trauma and damaging effects of the pill on them for those who go on to take it.
Now, my understanding is basically they get the prescription in the mail. They don't go into the doctor. They don't get a phone consult. They just get this prescription mailed to them, and then they start taking the pill. Is it three pills?
Supposed to be a two-pill regimen. The first pill poisons the child and cuts off the child's sustenance and progesterone needed to grow the baby. And the second pill induces what they call a miscarriage, but essentially induces labor. And unfortunately, you know, for women, these pills only approved up until about 10 weeks, but women are getting them in the second and third trimesters. We're seeing late-term abortions this way. It's barbaric. It's violent, and it results in the death of a child almost every time. And we want to see a Human Coalition women who feel served and cared for and know that they have better options than that for their children.
Well, and the issue with that is that, you know, knowing exactly the gestation, I know it's gotten a lot better, but even still there can be misrepresentations or misunderstandings and the woman may not know exactly. And if she doesn't go in and get any kind of proper doctor diet care or diagnosis or what have you to get that kind of date correct, then she's just guessing.
That's correct. She is. And she's not really told what to look for if a complication arises. She's often not told. She is told that she could be in trouble if she gets caught. And so if you do go to the ER and lie, and all of that's not true, that doesn't reflect the law of our land, which has always protected women in this scenario, but we're serving them day in and day out at Human Coalition, trying to intercept them before they make these life-altering, life-ending decisions. We have had women show up at our clinic who were ectopic, who had their pills in hand. Some women buy pills off eBay. They're completely unregulated. You know, I say you take the abortion distortion out of this and you say people were selling fentanyl or opioids or heroin or even death-inducing drugs online through this illegal network. Those are the types of legal frameworks that we should be applying in the abortion context, where a child, a dead child, is produced at the end of all of it.
Well, and then, you know, the conversation relative to this idea that, oh, well, you know, abortion was struck down by Roe v. Wade, and I think for people on the pro-life side of this that may have gone to sleep believing that that was the case, should be waking up now to realize that in many instances, abortions are even more frequent and easier to access than ever before, especially with this particular product.
Raising such an important point, Pastor Greg, and that is that abortion is still rampant in our country. It's still widely accessible in our country, no matter where you are or live, and our work is cut out for us as a movement. You know, we always say there is a supply and a demand here, and if we can serve women and care for them, 76% of women seeking abortion say they'd actually prefer to parent if their circumstances were different. And so for us as a movement, we do come alongside her. There are 2,500 pregnancy resource centers. We've built this infrastructure for this moment, and it's working. But we need more workers. We need more help in the movement, because our enemy is great, and they're mobilized and they're activated and doing whatever they can to distribute abortion killing pills as far and wide as our country allows.
Well, you make an interesting statement there when it comes to, you know, women saying, gosh, you know, I would have this child if my circumstances were different. And the majority of the time, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, I want to be factual with this, but the majority of the time, a lot of it is economics. It's the woman having the confidence to believe that she's going to be able to provide well for the child that she's bringing into this world, and that that child is going to have a good life or a good opportunity at life. Am I off the mark, or is that generally what you hear?
A big piece of the puzzle. Actually, the number one thing our women we serve say is that they are lacking support, and sometimes that's an emotional component.
Okay.
Pressured by family members, even told by friends, you can't do this. This is your only option. And lied to for 50 years by the abortion industry, which sends the message that they can't. And so when we come alongside her as a licensed nurse professional and say, we believe in you, you're capable, you're able, and we're here to support you, sometimes that's a life and death difference for her. It's a meaningful difference. And then from there, yes, we're often seeing women, 63% already have a child at home that they're trying to feed. She has an hourly wage paying job on average. The thought of taking off for 3 months and not being able to make rent or feed the child she currently has seems overwhelming to her. And so these are real women with real challenges. And sometimes all they need is a group like ours to come alongside, show compassionate care, help her get on her feet, help her solve some of these problems that she doesn't know she has resources available to solve.
Right.
And that can
Well, I think that's you know, one of the key messages, right, is that as you said, you've worked very hard with other agencies to create an opportunity and a network for these young women to be able to bring this baby in and have success in raising this child and be, you know, the mom that they want to be and give this baby an opportunity to live.
That's correct. These women, they desire, as I said, they wish they could parent, and sometimes they just don't see how. And that's where these groups coming in, our state partnerships through the Alternative to Abortion Program in Texas. There are 14 states that are programming services to pregnant women in need. And really, there's only one party who is voting for those types of programs. It's on the right. It's really the party and the movement of family and care for these vulnerable women. And the truth is, our goal is to have a path to independence for every single one, where they're on their own, budgeting on their own, with a consistent job, consistent rent. Many of them get kicked out of their houses by their boyfriends if they don't have an abortion. And so helping them overcome those types of challenges is what we're committed to doing.
Well, the other piece of this, and I know that, you know, at the point we're talking about, she's already pregnant, she's living with somebody, they've already done this, but the other side to this too is trying to do, I think, a better job of explaining the consequences of the act of having sex. What's good, you know, I mean, are you prepared for what potentially is going to happen or a good possibility will happen if you decide to start having sex? I mean, those kinds of things. I know everybody says, oh, we can't talk about abstinence, but it seems to me that, you know, that becomes really the only surefire means. And it really has to do then with, you know, kind of the other part of the equation, right? So if she's feeling devalued, which is why she feels like she can't be the kind of mom she thinks she's supposed to be, because she doesn't feel good about who she is to be able to process that, to be able to share that with her baby. Is that kind of accurate?
Factors at play. Certainly our circumstances are a huge one. A great example would be, we had a woman who came to us and she was homeless and pregnant, and she was living in her car with her 17-year-old son. And we were able to, at that point, begin a long process with her of finding safe housing for her and her 17-year-old son with a family member, helping her learn to save, helping her get a job, resume build, interview. Then she worked really hard and kept her job. We taught her budgeting skills. And at the end of her two-year cycle with us, not only had she chosen life, but they were all reunited and she purchased her first home. But what that took was a little bit of assistance along the way. Then sure. She's in, they're on their own, they're thriving. But that leg up sometimes is the difference between life and death situations for these children.
Well, you're teaching somebody how to fish. And, you know, I mean, it's great to give them a fish, but it's a lot better to be able to give them a hand up and teach them how to be able to, you know, take care of themselves.
Exactly. There's a lot of cultural circumstances involved, and the lack of support is a huge piece of it. And our culture has been taught that abortion is the easy solution. It's the easy way out. And that's a lie. It's not. These women are traumatized. They grieve. They go on to regret their choices. 81% say that they were impacted negatively by their abortion in their lives and wish they'd known. Many go on to have substance abuse issues, depression issues, addiction issues. The list goes on. And so it really is a life-saving grace for her when she has someone who can intervene on her behalf. And tell her that's not the only option she has. And I'm hopeful in a post-Roe world that over time, this culture of death will shift to a culture of life. As more children are born, as more mothers are made, and children can raise a hand 10 years from now, 20 years from now, and say, because of these laws, I'm here. Because my mom chose life, I exist. That's a powerful message. And we just hope and we're grateful for shows like this where we can get these words out and these messages out, because they're not getting out there in a lot of the media sources.
Well, no, I mean the media push is the Planned Parenthood push and the push towards abortion.
Yeah, they won't. You know, we'll do all these interviews time and time again in the national or even international outlets, and they'll never quote us because they don't really want the truth out there about how dangerous the abortion pill is, not only for women but for their unborn child. They want the public to feel persuaded on the abortion issue, but at the end of the day, these women's stories are powerful and they matter. We're trying to get these stories in front of as many judges as we can. In these court cases, we'll file briefs with just our client stories. We serve 200,000 clients, women seeking abortion in the last 10 years. We know their stories. We know how harmful the impacts of this can be, and we're advocating on their behalf.
When you talk about, can you share with my audience a couple of the stories that you're talking about that you include in these briefs to help persuade the judges to understand what is possible? Is that correct? And do you tell any of the horror stories of what women have gone through as well? Go ahead and feel free to share both.
Absolutely do. I mean, on one side of the equation, you have Planned Parenthood, who makes $1 billion a year, right? A huge industry we're up against. They are truly Goliath, and we're David, serving these same women, but hopefully with different outcomes. And their stories have been silenced. So what we do is try to elevate those stories, advocate on their behalf as well as their child's behalf. And the way we've done that is we have an abortion memorial wall. You can go to abortionmemorial.org right now and read the story for yourself of women who were not told, they were lied to. They said that it's just a clump of cells. It's just fetal tissue. That it's safe and easy as taking a Tylenol. And then they turn out and they see their dead unborn child. They don't know that their child by 8 weeks it has almost fully formed body. They're looking at real humans coming out of their own body after painful experiences, hemorrhaging. It's a violent process for the child. It's violent for her. And she's really shocked by all of that. So when they call us, sometimes they'll call us and we intervene, and then sometimes they call us and they go on to have their abortion in the middle of taking those pills when they're at home alone, which they're left alone by the abortion industry. They call us with a lot of traumatic experiences, not knowing that they're going to experience real labor-like pain, sometimes for months afterwards. We'll encourage them, of course, to go to the ER. We encourage them to get real medical care and assistance, and often it's too late. But we also do another thing. We refer for abortion reversal. which is simply providing a hormone that's required for pregnancy to counteract the effect of that first pill in the regimen. And that can be a life-saving process for these women in the middle who regret what they've just taken. There is an abortion reversal pill option for them. And so getting the word out there about that, which a lot of our pregnancy resource partner friends also do, that can be a powerful life-saving difference.
Well, what about the Abby Johnson story? I mean, you know, in that movie Unplanned, in the very beginning of that movie, this is exactly what she does. She takes the pill that she's given from the clinic, and she has a horrific experience.
That's common. That's the reality of what we're talking about, and it's interesting because when we tell these stories, they're not going, the media isn't wanting to cover them. So we cited this study that was done that showed 81% of women who have an abortion go on to say they were negatively impacted in their life from that decision. And the other side doesn't want that out there. The study is now under review. They're attacking this professor who committed her life to studying the impact of abortion on women. And we think their stories matter. We think their voices matter. And even sure. if they're against the abortion industry, we're here to advocate on their behalf to get these stories out there because we want women to know the truth before they make that life-altering and life-ending decision.
So talk to me about some of the positive stories that you share with the judges in circumstances where, again, they're being pressured to abort, but you guys come in and walk alongside of the mom.
Yes, what it looks like is we simply say, how can we help? We say, what about your circumstances? If you want to change those so that you can parent, can we come alongside you? And we've had many women who were kicked out of their homes for not getting an abortion that we find immediately. We partner with our church partners, our community partners, and any resource that we could come up with, we have 7,000 resources in our resource bank. We are there ready to serve wherever she is. We start with telecare first, which means she hits the phone, she's calling on her phone, and she's immediately in touch with a licensed nurse professional. Whether she's in a rural community or a healthcare desert, we can reach her statewide in certain states like Texas where that's funded. And we come alongside her. We locate housing for her, job placement for her. Sometimes it's as simple as helping her find insurance or Medicaid coverage for her pregnancy. We get her connected with a pro-life gynecologist as immediately as possible. And things like that start her processing this beautiful miracle that's growing inside of her. Then she sees her child through a sonogram with in-person care. And that's really a huge decision point for her when she hears her child's heartbeat for the first time and realizes this isn't just fetal tissue, which she has been told and lied to by the abortion industry. This is a growing human child in her womb with 10 fingers and 10 toes and a heartbeat and brain activity, can feel pain by 15 weeks. Once we start that process with her, it's a really beautiful process. And we have, of course, you can go to our website and see stories of these moms who chose life and who are so grateful and never, ever regret choosing to keep their children and parent their children.
And that's humancoalition.org, correct?
Humancoalition.org. You can learn more about us, our church partnerships and community partnerships. I think we as a movement coming together as communities around these women is really key.
And for those of you that are watching us right now, you can see their website up right next to Chelsea's lovely picture on the screen. And that's the website, humancoalition.org, humancoalition.org. What can folks do? What action can people be taking right now? I know that you're the national director for Texas. Let's talk Texas for just a minute, and then on a more national level as well.
Yeah, I think the number one thing people can do is support work like ours. And a lot of people have time, some people have money, and some people are able to be prayer warriors. And so whatever it is that you've been equipped and resourced with, saying, how can I utilize this for the movement? The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few. An example is in the state of Texas, 60,000 women a year obtained an abortion before Roe was overturned. Now they're just going out of state to do that. And so if you want to partner with us, that can either be financially, or maybe you're at a church and you want to start a program and partner with us through your church as a nonprofit and be a community resource so that when we have women who need help, over a weekend she finds herself kicked out of her home, we can call you and you can help us locate housing for her or an employment for her or affordable child care for her. Those are all ways that we partner with community partners. And you can go to humancoalition.org to learn just how to do that.
And it makes such a huge difference, right? I mean, when you guys have the resources to be able to connect them with, and for the young lady that is experiencing this situation, for her to know that there is a community out there that's actually putting it to action. Because I know, you know, over the years that, you know, in the conversations that I've had, debates that I've been in and so on, that trying to get folks on the faith side who are saying, you know, we don't want abortion, stop abortion, and I agree with all of that, but then there's no step up to say, okay, well, but now how do I fix this? Because as we've discussed in this segment, the school system is encouraging young ladies to have sex. They start programming them at 4 years of age, and they hope that by 9 to 11 years of age, Monica Klein's been on my program talking about it. Everett, I believe her last name was Everett, the gal that owned the abortion clinics up in Dallas years ago. But she, you know, she's talked about it. I mean, they're programming them between 9 and 11 is when they want them to have their first experience and their first pregnancy, and then ship them off to have their first abortion. That's insanity.
And there's certainly a role for fathers in this as well. I mean, we find that lack of support from fathers, men who are not taking ownership of their own choices as well, or responsibility themselves, if men do support her keeping her pregnancy, she is more inclined to keep her pregnancy. And so this fatherhood issue is a big one, that discipleship issue there. And I think there's a role for all of us. The church sometimes hesitates, pretending that it's a political issue, and really it's a human issue. It's a discipleship moment and opportunity, a moment for grace and leadership, and to really teach that there are ways as a community that will go better for us if we will come alongside and really be a counterforce to the culture, the sexual revolution that we're seeing now. That's on the church to fill that gap and have an alternative to what the world is teaching.
Well, and God's word tells us how important God believes life is. You know, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. I knew you before you were even formed in your mother's womb. I mean, God takes a direct interest. He says that he's counted the hairs on our head. So obviously, you know, our Father in heaven is very concerned about every single one of his children, every life. And you know, if that's the case, then I think we need to come alongside that and be just as equally concerned about it as well.
And it's just encouraging the love of God that says everybody has a purpose and a design, and that a divine purpose and design, you know, that at the end of the day, all roads lead to the spiritual health of our country. And a lot of by us being a cultural force against what the culture of death and the culture that says humans are disposable, women are disposable, we have an opportunity here in a post-war world to lean in. And it's like I Amen. Said, workers are few, so everyone can be a worker. There's plenty of work.
No, absolutely. Again, sign up humancoalition.org, humancoalition.org. You can learn more there. You can get involved there as well. And I just close with this final quick story, and that, you know, Jim Robinson, the minister who has had a profound effect on advancing the gospel around the world and does a tremendous amount of work internationally in saving orphans and so forth, you know, he was the result of a rape, and his mom chose to keep him rather than abort him, which in those days that was the push. And you know, what an impact his life has had. Every life counts. Every life matters. Every life has an impact. And I just encourage you folks, again, humancoalition.org. Chelsea, thanks so much for being with me today. As always, good to see you, and greatly appreciate all the hard work that you're doing.
Thank you. I so appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
You got it. All right, folks, we're out of time. Texas Fully Loaded coming up on the other side. I'll be back with more Chosen Generation Radio tomorrow, right here, TECNTV.com, as well as across all of our network.